And good afternoon. It's certainly good to see each of you here. Appreciate that. I know God certainly appreciates His people and coming to worship Him and honor Him and give Him glory and praise. I did want to acknowledge that Clorinda is here, and we're certainly very, very thankful for that. So glad she's doing better. Thought I'd update you a little bit on my son, Roderick. He's been hurting quite a bit. I think Mr. Holliday mentioned last Sabbath about kidney stones, and he went to the neurologist and found out, and found out that he has two kidney stones. One is in the tube, and one is in his kidney, but he's hurt quite a bit with that. He's come home from work a couple of days early because of the severe pain. He also keeps some elderly gentlemen in the evening, and he's had to cancel that, I believe, a couple of times as well. But apparently they have not moved. It's still quite painful for him. Wanted to mention and ask for prayer for Betty, my wife. She's not doing good at all. I really don't know what is going on. We had been on a pretty strict diet, but we have been off of it now a week today. And she just is not rebounding and coming back. The pains in her head are quite severe, but every time that she tries to get up, whether that be out of a chair or out of bed, she just feels like she's about to pass out, and she immediately has to sit back down or lay down. And so we certainly do not know what is going on, but the beautiful thing about it is God does, and God certainly has the capacity and the ability and the love to heal her. So I would appreciate you praying for her. Well, here, of course, the talk is about the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, and I specifically today want to talk more about the days of unleavened bread, even though they are so closely knit and joined that actually the 8-day period for the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, the 7 days of unleavened bread, are actually intertwined in name. So many times they are referred to as the Passover, and so many times they are referred to as the days of unleavened bread. But today I want to talk about the days of unleavened bread. Are they really necessary? Is it something that's just physical, or is it something that has deep spiritual meaning that each and every one of us should do? You know, here we are, sitting here today, swamped, tired, enervated. You probably have so many things on your to-do list that you can hardly breathe at times. It seems like we are behind in getting things done all the time. We seem like everybody is in a hurry. Everybody has so much that they want to accomplish or so much to do. They're under pressure. They're under time restraints and so forth. But I want to deal with one aspect of the pressure that we go through in this life, and especially this time of year, the aspect of the pressure of the cleaning of the days of unleavened bread, of putting leaven out, and eating the leavened bread. Why would somebody do that? I mean, is that really necessary today? Why would you worry about whether you've got leaven in your house or not? I went to visit Dad this morning, and as Mr. Holliday said, he's doing a lot better. I told him today, just wait till he gets as old as I am and he'll see. But he chuckled a little bit, and he said, yeah, I dread it. But he was telling me about the example of an individual that he went to visit, and this was not a member, but someone that was interested in God's church. And he said, oh, the days of unleavened bread, I don't worry about that. I just take way ahead of time. I just take all of my leaven and I put it in the middle of the dining room table. And then when the days of unleavened bread come, I've got it right there. And if I need anything, I can just reach and grab it. And of course, Dad thought, well, this isn't a very good visit. I probably need to get out of here pretty quick. But anyway, what about cleaning? What about not eating leaven. What about eating unleavened bread? Is it just physical? Does it have any spiritual implications for us? I think over the years we've seen a definite watering down of the cleaning, in particular for the days of unleavened bread. Perhaps we've seen even a watering down of eating leaven. Well, it's really not that bad or that harmful or whatever. The reasoning that was emphasized for not having to go to so much trouble to clean was that people said that we emphasize the physical too much and not the spiritual enough. And I do believe that probably was a very fair and accurate estimation and evaluation of our state at that time. But now have we gone to the opposite extreme and in the other direction where the days of unleavened bread mean very little? That cleaning for the days of unleavened bread, that we spend so little time, that it has so little meaning to us, or value at all? Is it just a physical ritual or spiritual meaning and depth to it? You know, in your community and probably among your family, you would be praised for and honored and thought, wow, that's good. Boy, I wish I had that kind of get up and go for cleaning for the spring house cleaning. But you would be thought of as being some kind of a squirrel or some kind of a nut if you clean for the, quote, days of unleavened bread or observe and keep the days of unleavened bread. How important is it really to keep the days of unleavened bread? Strong's number 4682, MATSTAW, means unleavened bread. It's taken from the Hebrew 4711 in the sense of greedily devouring for sweetness, properly sweetness, consecratedly sweet, that is, not soured or bittered with yeast, specifically an unfermented cake or loaf, or elliptically the festival of Passover because no leaven was to be used, unleavened bread, cake, and etc., without leavening. The Greek counterpart is Strong's 106, AZUMOS, and it means unleavened, that is, figuratively, uncorrupted, in the neuter pure, plural, specifically by implication, the Passover week, the days of unleavened bread. The first place that the mention of unleavened bread is found is in Genesis, the 19th chapter, in verse 3. And I'm not going to turn there. You're familiar with the story. You remember when Moses was talking with God, the three angels came and said, we're going to, you know, destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And so he said, well, what pre-adventure you find 50 righteous? And Christ said, okay, I'll spare it. And then he got him down to 20, and then he got him down to 10. And he said, you know, what if you find 10 righteous people? He said, okay, then I will spare it. So the two angels that were with Jesus Christ went to Sodom. And of course, Lot saw them come in the city gates, and he begged them to come into the house because he knew the state of mind of the area and territory of where he lived. And so he fixed a meal for them. And in this meal, he had unleavened bread. He served up a feast, it says, but the only thing listed that they had on their menu was unleavened bread. And I think that's significant in light of why the angels went to Sodom to begin with and why they were there. Lot and his family were the only individuals that were spared when the angels destroyed the city. Lot had some problems, absolutely, but he was the only man in Sodom who was, quote, uncorrupted enough to be able to be spared from the destruction along with Sodom. The next occurrence where we find the mention of unleavened bread is in the passage about the original Passover in Exodus, the 12th chapter. Exodus 12 and verse 1. We'll be spending considerable time here and going through some things about the Passover and going through primarily things about the days of unleavened bread. Exodus 12 and verse 1 through 20. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, "This month shall be to you your beginning of months," the beginning of the year. It's interesting that God's year begins in the spring when things are budding forth, when they're beautiful, when the weather is warming up and people seem happier and more joyful and so forth. And of course, man's year begins in the dead of winter when it's cold and miserable and not much daylight and so forth. But anyway, he said, "This shall be your beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak to all of the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons, according to each man's needs. You shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb," in verse 5, "shall be without blemish," because of course it represented Jesus' sacrifice that he gave for us, "shall be without blemish, a male of the first year, and you shall take it from the sheep or from the goats. Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month." And I understand that there are some Jewish traditions that say that this lamb from the 10th to the 14th was actually kept inside of their homes. That was due to several reasons, according to Jewish tradition. Number one, that they would grow to love this little lamb, that they would grow to really be close to it and to see the great sacrifice that had to be paid. And so he says here in verse 6, "Now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, and then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. And they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the house where they eat it. And then they shall eat the flesh of that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat it raw, nor boiled, at all with water, but roasted in fire, its head, with its legs, and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until the morning. And what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire." In verse 11, "And thus you shall eat it, with a belt on your waist, and your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and so you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover." In verse 12, "For I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night, and I will strike all of the firstborn of the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all of the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." So in verse 14, "So this day shall be unto you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast unto the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever," excuse me, "whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. And on the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which every one must eat, and that only may be prepared by you. So in verse 17, you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance, just as we read earlier. In verse 18, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. And in verse 19, for 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all of your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. I want to go through real quick and let's notice seven different highlights that is brought out in this first 20 verses here. In verse 8, it says, first of all, number 1, they shall eat of the flesh that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. This Passover lamb, which, of course, represented, as each of you know, Christ's sacrifice for us, was eaten with unleavened bread. This represents the purity. It represents the unblemished life of the Messiah. And once the sacrifices later were instituted with the Levitical priesthood, every meat sacrifice that was offered and was burned up was offered with unleavened bread, and it was burned along with it. Number 2, verse 11. And thus you shall eat it, with a belt on your waist and sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and so you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. So they were instructed here to eat in a hurry, to eat this in a hurry and to be ready to go. As it were, they had their marching orders that they were to be ready as though they were going to run out and be ready to leave at any moment. And so we find then that they were to be sharp, that they were to be alert, that they were to be ready, because God was preparing them and gave them notice that he was going to bring them out of bondage. Number 3, verse 14. Here we introduce the, quote, 7 days of unleavened bread. So this day, verse 14, shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast unto the Lord throughout your generations, and you shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. So this was a memorial that was to be observed forever. It was an everlasting ordinance. You know, you kind of get the impression that this was important to God, that he thought this was something that the Israelites needed to be able to comprehend him more and with a greater depth. So it sounds like this was something that God put a lot of emphasis on and in this eating of unleavened bread. Then number 4, verse 15. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. Here's the institution of the 7 days of unleavened bread. John Gill's exposition of the whole Bible says this: for though the Passover lamb was eaten with unleavened bread, and the Israelites ate no other type of bread, not only for 7 days, but for 30 days following, yet this was not only by divine command, but through necessity, because they did not have any leavened bread to take with them. They didn't have any to eat for then the 37 days. But in later times, they were commanded to keep the feast for 7 days, in which they were not to eat leavened bread, in commemoration of their hasty departure out of Egypt, not having time to leaven the dough in their troughs, and their distress and want for savory bread. Many of you women in the past, or perhaps now, have made some homemade sourdough bread. And that's basically the type of bread that the Israelites had. It was goes through a fermenting process. I don't know if the men know much about sourdough bread, but you actually get a starter from someone that has fermented, it has gone through this process, and it takes about 7 days for this actually to build up the yeast and so forth to make your sourdough bread. And you mix it in the dough, and it leavens, a little leaven leavens a whole lump, and then you pull out a piece of that and you keep it for the next batch, and again the leaven then permeates the entire thing. So we find here that they did not have the leaven, nor did they have time because of the haste that God told them to be in. Point number 5 is found in verse 15. And it says, continued from before, it says, on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. And again, referring to Gill's commentary, he has an interesting observation on the Jewish law and their approach to cleaning for the days of unleavened bread and being able to get the leaven out. It says, out of their dwelling houses, or to get the leaven out of their dwelling houses, which were to be diligently searched for that purpose, and every hole and crevice in them, and not only their lower rooms in their dining rooms and parlors, but in the upper rooms and bedchambers, because it is possible a man might sometimes go into them with a piece of bread in his hand and drop or leave some of it behind him. Yes, synagogues and schools were to be searched, since children might carry thither leavened breads. And in this search was to be made by the light of a lamp or candle, not by the light of the moon, if in the night, nor by the light of the sun, if in the day, but by the light of a lamp or candle, and not by the light of a torch, or of a lump of fat, or grease, or oil, but by a lamp or candle of wax. And this search was to be made at the beginning of the night of the 14th of Nisan. Yea, it is said that leavened bread was forbidden from the 7th hour of that day, that is, at 1 o'clock. They always had to be more righteous. In the afternoon and upwards, which is in the middle of the day. The account of the mystic doctors is, as R. Meyer says, that they may eat leaven the whole 5th hour, 11 o'clock in the morning, and burn it at the beginning of the 6th, or at 12 o'clock. Our Judah says they may eat it all the 4th hour, or the 10th, or 10 o'clock, and suspend it the whole 5th hour and burn it at the beginning of the 6th. Of course, they get into, you know, Jewish tradition and all of that. So point number 6, again in verse 15, continuing, for whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the 7th day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. And Gill has this to say, for whoever eateth leavened bread from the first day until the 7th day, from the first of the 7 days until the last of them, that soul shall be cut off from Israel, either from the commonwealth of Israel, and be defranchised, and not accounted as an Israelite, in other words, lose their citizenship, or from the Israelitish church state, and have no communion in it, in other words, not be allowed to partake of their religious and worship services, or partake of the ordinances at it, or if it is to be understood of cutting off by death, it is either by the hand of the civil magistrate or by the immediate hand of God, and sometimes by the Jewish interpreted of a man dying either without children or because he is 50 years of age and some even understand it of destruction of the soul and body, or of eternal damnation. R&D commentary states this: as bread, which is the principal means of preserving life, might easily be regarded as the symbol of life itself. So far as the latter is set forth in the means employed for its own maintenance and invigoration, so the matzahs, or unleavened loaves, were symbolic of the new life as cleansed from the leaven of a sinful nature. But if the eating of matzah was to shadow forth the new life which Israel was transferred, anyone who ate leavened bread at the feast would renounce this new life, and therefore he would be cut off from Israel, cut off from the congregation of Israel. In other words, they'd be put out of the church. They would lose their citizenship, be put out of the nation. Barnes says this about being, quote, cut off: the penalty inflicted on those who transgress the command may be accounted for on the ground that it was an act of rebellion. So in other words, he said, so if a person ate leavening, then they did it as an act of rebellion against God. Point number 7, verse 16. Point number 7. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, and that may only be prepared by you. So here we find the institution of the first two holy days, the first and the last, or first and seventh day of unleavened bread. Now here the God says that these days are holy. What is the difference between something that's holy and something that is sacred? You know the difference? Something that is holy means that God's active presence is in that. The Sabbath is holy. God's active presence is in the Sabbath. There were many things that were sacred, like with the temple, the vessels, the laver or bowl that they had, and some of these things. But anything that has God's active presence in it is holy. And so these days of unleavened bread, the first and the last day, are holy, and God's active presence is there. Sacred things are generally things that are set apart for a holy use, things that are set apart to worship a holy God, but they themselves do not have God's active presence in them. And so it's very important to understand what a statement he's making here, that he says these days are holy. Their holy time, that God's presence is there. These days have God's active presence in them. Where do you think your presence should be during these days? Interesting 7 points, I think, that are brought out in this very short passage. Then in verse 17 on through verse 20, he reiterates the command of keeping the days of unleavened bread. And he said, you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generation as an everlasting ordinance. And in verse 18, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at even, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at even. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whosoever eats what is leavened, that same person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened, and all of your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. So this was quite important to God, because he actually put his presence in these days. And he gave specific instructions as to how these days are to be kept. Why put out leaven? What's the point? I mean, you know, sure, you get your house clean. You have opportunity to maybe get behind things that you haven't gotten behind in a while and clean behind there and this and that. But really, what is the point and what is the purpose? We read earlier the extent that Jewish households went to when searching for leaven. They would get down in every little crack and every little crevice, and they would take a candle or a lamp, as they called it, and very specific. It couldn't be an oil lamp or whatever. It had to be a wax thing. And even if it was daylight, they got down there with that so that they could have better vision, so that they could see if a breadcrumb had fallen down there or not. And so that they would have the better life, a light, not to miss any leaven whatsoever. Why would somebody go to that extreme? Why would somebody go to that extent? Why would they bend their back and their elbow, so to speak, and work that hard? As I asked in the beginning, are there any spiritual ramifications for being so tenacious and being so thorough in putting leaven away? 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 1 through 8. Here Paul addresses how immorality, how sin defiles the church of God. 1 Corinthians 5 and verses 1 through 8. A sad account here. It is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, as such sexual immorality that is not even named among the Gentiles of all things, that a man has his father's wife. Now, it's not clear, at least as far as I know, whether this is talking about literally his mother or his stepmother, but either way, how absolutely atrocious, how horrible, some of the lowest depravity on the face of the earth. And yet this church at Corinth, he says, you are puffed up. Drawing, as we're going to see, on the analogy of what leavening does and how it puffs up and it can destroy. And have not rather mourned. He said, you need to be crying. You need to understand your spiritual state. You need to come to the place where you realize how rotten and sorry this really is. But you think, oh, we're tolerant. We have so much love and we have so much compassion. And oh, we really, you know, welcome so-and-so and such-and-such. And so he says, you're puffed up and have not rather mourned that he who has done this deed might be taken away from among you. Sounds like the days of old that we just read there in Exodus about putting them out, and disfellowshipping them and so forth. And so he says in verse 3, for I indeed am absent in the body, but present in spirit, and have already judged, as though I were present, him that has done, that has so done this deed. And in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, so he uses the greatest authority that we know upon this earth, other than God the Father. So in the name of Jesus Christ, when you are gathered together along with my spirit, with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ, deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. Sounds hard, sounds harsh, and sounds cruel. It was a very, very loving thing that he told them to do, as we're going to see. He said, deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that his spirit may be saved in the day of the Lord Jesus, hoping that he would come to a place of repentance. But here he was doing all of this debauchery and sleeping with his mother or his stepmother. And he was doing all of this absolute wretchedness in the sight of God that wasn't even so much as named among the Gentiles, who virtually had no knowledge of God's law. And yet here he was welcomed in services, and people said, oh, I love you, brother, and here, let's, you know, get together, and boy, we're so wonderful, and we're so loving, and we're so kind, and aren't we great? Just look how wonderful we truly are. And he says here in verse 6, your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? That you take a little bit, like I said, and you pinch it off, and you put it in the next batch, and it spreads through that batch, and you take a little bit of that and pinch it off and put it in the next batch, and it spreads through that batch, and so forth. Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. So here they were in a physical state of being unleavened. That is, the Apostle Paul tells them, he said, you are unleavened, but their attitude, their heart, their understanding of biblical knowledge was definitely filled with leaven. And so he said, therefore purge out this old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened, for indeed Christ our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, this feast that has God's holy divine presence in it. He said, let us keep the feast, not with this garbage, not with this sin, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. So here in these last two verses, Paul uses the word leaven or unleavened 7 times, just in verses 6 through 8. And again, one might come to the conclusion that the Apostle Paul was certainly trying to draw a spiritual analogy from a physical example and problem that they had. This was definitely a, quote, type of a very deep spiritual lesson that this church at Corinth needed to learn. Paul told this church to keep the feast. The book of 1 Corinthians was written during the days of unleavened bread in 55 A.D. So here, 24 years after Jesus Christ was crucified and resurrected, everything that was, quote, nailed to the cross, had been nailed to the cross. Everything, 24 years later, everything that had been, quote, done away, had been done away. And here was the Apostle Paul talking to a Gentile church, not a bunch of converts, not a bunch of Jews, talking to a Gentile church, and he said, keep the feast. And he ordered them to observe the days of unleavened bread and to keep that feast. And he taught them to keep the days of unleavened bread in a spirit, not just in the flesh or in the letter of the law, and not really seeing the spiritual application of it. In Matthew, the 16th chapter, Matthew 16, beginning in verse 1, Matthew 16 and verse 1, here we read about the good old boys. And then the Pharisees and the Sadducees came, and as usual, testing him. So here they came for a purpose, to be able to try to trick Jesus, to try to trip him up, and to ask him things or ask him to do something, and in this case to show a sign, so that they could ridicule him. So then the Pharisees and the Sadducees came, testing him, and they asked him that he would show them a sign from heaven. And in verse 2 he said, answered them and said unto them, when it's evening you say, as are great weather forecasters, in the evening you say, oh, it's going to be fair weather, for the sky is red. And that's pretty good way to tell the weather, by the way. And in the morning, it'll be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. And he says, you bunch of hypocrites. You know how to discern the face of the sky because they were accurate in that. But you cannot discern the signs of the time. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, but no sign shall be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. Now when his disciples came to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. And then Jesus said unto them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the Sadducees. So this had been on his mind ever since, verse 1, ever since they came to him challenging him, say, you know, if you're the Son of God, prove it. Give us a sign, which he gave them many, of course, but they rejected all of that. And so he told his disciples to take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the scribes. And they reasoned among themselves. I could just see them over there in this little huddle, buzz, 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 you know, and they were talking and they were discussing, and this one said this and that and shaking their heads, and no, I don't agree with that. And what did he mean by all of this? And finally they came to the conclusion, it is because we have taken no bread. Ah, that settles it. That was the coup de grace. That was it. He was saying, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees because you guys didn't bring any bread with you. And so then Christ clearly, of course, labeled the deadly sins of the Pharisees, but the disciples just did not get it. They didn't comprehend the spiritual warning and lessons of this type of leavening. They thought he was talking about food. They thought he was just referring to something physical. And yet Christ used this as a type of sin, as a type of rotten attitude. Then in verse 8, but Jesus, being aware of it, he probably overheard them or saw them over there in their little huddle, and he knew they weren't about to play football. But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, O ye of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves, because you have brought no bread? Do you, in verse 9, not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves and the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves and the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it that you do not understand that I do not speak to you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees? Then in verse 12, then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So Christ used a physical analogy to teach a very deep and spiritual concept. So these days are a physical reminder to put physical sins, mistakes, faults, and problems, and to put spiritual sins, mistakes, faults, and problems out of our life as we come to the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. How do you prepare for the days of unleavened bread very quickly? There were 3 words used for leavening. I gave one earlier, the Hebrew M-E-C-H-A-M-E-T-Z, refers to a leavening agent, a substance used to pull up or to produce fermentation. Example is like yeast, bicarbonate of soda, which is baking soda or baking powder or something like that. They did not have the corner market to go and fuel their camel up and run in real quick to the 7-Eleven and grab this can of yeast or baking powder or baking soda. The second word is C-H-A-M-E-T-Z, and it means food that has been leavened, because all foods that are leavened, it causes them to rise. It causes them to puff up. And then the third one is O-H-D, and it means like sourdough, a naturally fermenting, yeasty batter. Consequently, these items have to be put out of your home. The yeast, the baking powder, the baking soda. As we have seen, we're commanded to put leaven out completely of our homes and off of our property. Breads, cookies. I love cookies. My sister loves cookies. Cereal, pizza, ice cream cones, some pie dough. Some is okay, some is not. Some does contain leavening. But all of that needs to be removed. The following items, though, are okay, and some people have questions about that. Brewer's yeast. Some people take that for supposedly health benefits. Brewer's yeast is inert. It is not a leavening agent. It's dead, inert. It's not used to leaven anything. It will not make bread rise. Cream of tartar by itself is not a leavening agent. It has to be combined with eggs to produce the puffing effect. Yeast extracts. People read that on the label and they think, oh, this got yeast in it, yeast extracts. It's a derivative of yeast, and yet it is not a yeast agent. It will not make food rise. I don't care how much you put in it, in bread or whatever, it will not make it rise. We find at times it's used in pet food a lot. It's used sometimes in human food, but that's fine. It is not a yeast that produces, you know, the swelling and the puffing up and so forth. But we do need to become label conscious. We do need to come to the place where we really read labels during the days and prior to the days of unleavened bread. When you're going through your pantry and you're looking at things, take each and every can, unless you canned it yourself, take each and every can and look at it and look at the ingredients, because sometimes you will be absolutely shocked where you find leaven. You need to check the label on things like matzos. Some matzos contain leavening. And I was shocked when I found that out. I think it's a good idea to share recipes during the days of unleavened bread. You know, some of you have some excellent things that you prepare and fix. And if you come across something that is just outstanding, pass it on. Share it. Be willing to let others know, you know, share what you have. Maybe you want to prepare that special unleavened dish or recipe and bring it on the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, whether you're assigned, you know, to bring something or not. But that way we could share. It doesn't matter if you have the, quote, responsibility that week or not to bring snacks. But again, you can give, you can serve, you can share with what you have and what you might know. Maybe someone sent you a email or a letter with a recipe that is just absolutely wonderful. Share that so that we all enjoy the days of unleavened bread together. And when you're cleaning, make it a family project. Clean and vacuum the whole house, because that's everyone's responsibility. It's not just the wife's responsibility to remove sin from the house. It's your responsibility. It's my responsibility. It is the children's responsibility. We need to clean the stove. I would recommend you even clean behind the stove and the refrigerator when possible. Make sure you clean the beds and the couch and the chairs. Betty was saying this morning that we've got to get this couch cleaned, because we usually sit there in the evening and eat our dinner. And, of course, stuff falls down. And so we've got to make sure that we really go to town on that and clean that. Chairs and toasters. I remember the first toaster that we ever had. It was given to us as a gift. And I love toast. But when it came to the days of unleavened bread, I got a toothpick, I got an ice pick, and I got a toothbrush. And I could not get that thing clean. Every time I looked, there was more leaven. There was more crumbs. And I worked and I worked. I did not have a compressor an air compressor at the time to blow it out. And I wound up, I hate to say, but I wound up throwing the thing away because I could not get it clean. Well, now we have a toaster. First time in, well, I guess we've been married 40, almost 47 years. And we just got one here this past fall. And that's the first one we've had since that one I threw away. But now I have a compressor that I can take it and I can blow it out and I can make sure that it is clean. But, you know, you need to do that. You need to make sure that, all of your chairs and everything is clean. Again, the husband should help. The children should help. The wife should help. Because we all have sin. And we should all learn the lesson of putting sin out of our life and getting rid of sin in our own personal life. What about cleaning the garage? What about the car? And be sure and don't leave leaven in the vacuum cleaner. I've known a lot of people that have gone diligently, you know, to cleaning and this and that, and then they forget to empty the vacuum cleaner, and they've got it all in one pile. You know, they've got their leaven in one source, but don't forget to empty that. Try to use up, of course, the leaven before the days of unleavened bread as much as possible. Don't forget the freezer. You know, that anniversary cake that you're saving for your next anniversary has to go. It's just leavened, and even though it's, quote, frozen, even though it's in the freezer, God says that none of it should be on our property. In Exodus, the 23rd chapter in verse 18, Exodus 23 and verse 18. This is a scripture that I had no idea that that's what this was talking about until last night. Exodus 23 and verse 18. Marvin Taylor and I were talking how God reveals certain things that you can read over and over and over and over, and then all of a sudden it's just like, huh, you know. Exodus 23 and verse 18 and 19. He said, "You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread." And as I mentioned, all of the meat sacrifices had to be offered with unleavened bread. "But you shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with unleavened bread, nor shall the fat of my sacrifice remain until morning. The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring into the house of the Lord your God, and you shall not boil a young goat in his mother's milk." Now you're sitting there thinking, yep, there goes Cowan again. He read the wrong scripture, didn't he? Notice what the KND commentary says about Exodus 23 and verse 18 and 19. "The blessing attended their appearing before the Lord was dependent upon the feast being kept in the proper way by the observation of the three rules laid down in Exodus 23 and verse 18 and verse 19. You shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice upon leavened bread. Upon, as in Exodus 12 and verse 8, denoting the basis upon which the sacrifice were offered. The meaning has been correctly given by the early commentators, quote, as long as there is any leavened bread in your houses, or until the leaven has been entirely removed from your houses. The reference made here to the removal of leaven and the expression blood of my sacrifice both point to the paschal lamb, which was regarded as the sacrifice of Jehovah on the account of its great importance. Oakley's gives this explanation, my Passover, for my sacrifice. So the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, when we keep it properly, all, as he says here, leaven must be removed from our home and spiritually removed from our life. You work and you work and you work until you think, now I've got it all. But chances are you will find some more that is there. It's amazing how many times. I know we all have stories. We all have things we could tell about how in the middle of the days of unleavened bread, we open a drawer and there's a biscuit, you know, or whatever, or something hidden in the refrigerator or freezer in the back that we didn't know was there, or in the car. You open the glove compartment, which how often do you open your glove compartment? I don't open mine, what, every 2 months or something? And there's crackers in there, and you didn't even think about that, you know. But this stuff that's hidden in our life, and again, I think we learn spiritual lessons from that, great important lessons. So we're to keep the Passover and the days of unleavened bread properly. That all leaven must be removed from our houses, and like I said, it must be removed spiritually from our life. But it is amazing how easy it does return. They're not the days of unleavened fish food. It's not the days of unleavened dog food. Not the days of unleavened bread or pillows or inflated tires. By the way, I got great news for you. You do not have to let all of the air out of your tires. They can be puffed up and bring you to church, and that's okay. Certainly we should clean, and we should clean diligently. But you should not spend more time and more hours looking for crumbs than you spend in prayer and Bible study and evaluating yourself and your spiritual crumbs in preparation for the days of unleavened bread. Valuable time that you should spend looking for and searching for that hidden leaven, that leaven that has fallen in the crack of your heart, to be able to root that out. Seems like we as human beings go to two extremes. We're totally worn out, totally exhausted, because we have worked so hard to put the leaven out of our homes, and then we get too sick to even come to the holy days where God's presence is. Too sick to really get the meaning out of the feast. Where on the other hand, the other extreme, others exert little or no effort whatsoever, and they miss out so much on the deep spiritual meaning of the days of unleavened bread. Sin is difficult, it's hard to get out of our life. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could just take a vacuum cleaner, stick it in the air, and say, oh, I got all 11, and that's the end of it. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that with